And now your host, John Friend.
All right, folks, welcome back to another edition of The Realist Report. This is your host, John Friend. Today is Sunday, March 3rd, 2019, and this is a live edition of The Realist Report, broadcast here on EurofolkRadio.com. Of course, my website is TheRealistReport.com, where you will find an extensive archive of The Realist Report podcasts, as well as other radio programs I've participated in. You will also find all of my blog posts and articles, a contact page, my Twitter feed, which is embedded in the right-hand sidebar of the website, and many other useful and important links. I am a regular reporter for American Free Press, America's last real newspaper, and I also contribute to The Barnes Review, the bi-monthly history magazine affiliated with American Free Press. I encourage listeners to subscribe to these fine print publications. Check out AmericanFreePress.net and BarnesReview.org for all of the details. Okay, with that said, let me introduce our special guest this evening. Tan Stoffel from Age of Treason is joining us once again. Tan is one of the most articulate and well-spoken critics of Jewish power and influence in society. Topics we will be surely addressing during this podcast today. Tan, welcome back to the program, sir. How are you, my friend?
Very good, John. Good to be back. Good to talk to you.
Yes, sir. Yes,
it's been a long time since December 2016, I think.
Yes, no doubt. It has been a while. I know you are certainly not as active on your website as you once were. I don't think you're even doing a regular podcast anymore. So I guess to kind of get started, could you kind of just briefly tell us what you've been up to and of course, promote your website, which is Age of Treason, age-of-treason.com. And I will have a link over to your site once I post this program. So why don't you just fill us in briefly what you've been up to?
Well, I've been watching the Trump administration, to put it kindly. And social happenings. I've actually gotten bored with Trump in the last year or two, even paying attention as closely as I was. I'm not doing much of anything. I mean, as you can see, I don't blog very often. Certainly not as often as I used to, and I'm not podcasting on a regular basis. But I do enjoy having conversations with people who of like mind who want to have a back and forth about the subjects I'm interested in, and that's what I do. I do what I can to the extent I'm able to.
Sure, yeah, and you've been at it for a number of years. I'm sure most people listening are familiar with your work, but if anybody out there is not, definitely go back and check out Tan's website. And I know, do you still maintain that that T feed where you kind of aggregate various radio programs? Yeah, that's very helpful. I've always been a big fan of your work in that regard as well.
Yeah, I enjoy that. And I am very active on that. I've got it to about, I think, a post every other day of some interesting thing, the enemy talking amongst themselves and also our side, people, racialists, Jewish racialists talking. And I think it's a good mix of stuff. It's basically what I listen to. And if other people want to listen in, they like that kind of stuff. I hope that the feed provides them some, thinking.
Yes, no doubt. And speaking of your website, the very first topic I want to jump into is this increasingly tyrannical campaign to shut down quote-unquote anti-Semites and quote-unquote racists and Holocaust deniers and everybody else that's basically politically incorrect, deviating any way from the prevailing politically correct narrative on any number of topics. And you were recently targeted. I want to say it was over the course of the past week or so. Your website was taken down. From what I understand, the company you were using to host your website basically just terminated your contract. And you can maybe, kind of provide some more details. But I also know Carolyn Yeager, who you used to work very closely with. She's been a guest on this program a number of times. I've always been a big fan of her work as well. She was also targeted. You guys were apparently using the same exact company. So you guys both kind of went through this at the same time. And, you know, other people have been dealing with similar issues over the course of the past 3 or 4 years at least. So can you kind of talk about what happened with your web hosting company and this, you know, increasingly tyrannical campaign to shut people down?
Yeah, I didn't panic at first. Because of the message that they provided, you know, first of all, my site was just gone. The DNS wouldn't respond. And then when I tried to log into the administrative console, it gave me a message that there was some security concern and for your own protection, this or that. So it was misleading about why I was shut down. And it was a weekend, so they didn't. And Monday was a holiday. So it wasn't until Tuesday, business hours, that their security people would answer the phone about what the problem was. And when I finally talked to them, it literally the conversation was no longer than it takes to read the blog post I made about what happened, where the guy was, again, very squirrely about why I was shut down. But when I pressed him on it, you know, he said, blah, blah, hate. And I said, can you cite some specific example? And he said, do I really have to do that? As if I guess, you know, just from looking at my page, it's just self-evident that it's something that shouldn't be on the internet. But I was, you know, a little, I had to think a little while, where do I want to move? Because I don't want to go through this on a regular basis. I want to pick a place where I'm pretty certain things are going to stick for a while. I don't mind moving every 4 or 5 years, or even more often than that would be okay, because it gave me the opportunity to clean some stuff up that otherwise you get used to, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And so you let stuff just sit. So anyway, it gave me a chance to clean house a little bit. I think it was not targeted individually because of some external complaint. I think it had to do with the fact that the company had recently merged with another company. And so they were doing some sort of internal corporate house cleaning of it might even have to do mostly with old hardware that we were running on, because I got an email at the same time they were shutting me down. I got another email that was saying how they were going to jack my bill a little bit because I'm running on old infrastructure and it costs more to handle that. So I think it was probably a combination of reasons, but it was mostly an internal thing, an internal review. So it probably won't happen again. I don't want to say for sure because I don't know. They didn't tell me exactly why, other than that vague hate thing. But I think it was an internal thing.
Okay, very interesting. Yeah, that's probably better than, you know, the ADL going straight to the web hosting company and saying, hey, look, this guy is criticizing Jews. He's an anti-Semite. He's a hater. Shut him down. Which is, you know, basically what they've been doing. You know, that's their most common tactic. You know, the outside parties will basically contact private corporations like Twitter, for example, or these various web hosting companies or your place of employment. In my case, that's happened a couple times.
Yes.
And you know, either get you fired or get you shut down or kicked off the platform or whatever it is. But I'm glad that your website is back online, and it is. It was down for a couple days, I know. And I actually received a few emails from people I had actually never even heard from, at least not that I remember, asking me, oh, hey, John, did you know that Tan Stoffel's website is down? You know, what happened to him? Did he delete everything? You know, what's going on? You know, so people were pretty concerned, rightfully so, because again, you know, you've been a very articulate and passionate champion of these issues for a number of years, provided a lot of very good material, and it really would be a shame to see it all go down the tubes like that. So I'm glad you're back online. Do you want to comment on your new web hosting company and their commitment to free speech? I guess they'll really be tested with your website.
Yeah, they say that they're free speech hosting, Orange website or Orange web host. They're based in Iceland. They're a bit more expensive than you would pay for the same hardware and bandwidth elsewhere or in the States. But it's because they make that claim that they are a free speech hosting site that generally rejects people's hurt feelings as a reason to take sites down. They want it to be illegal according to the Icelandic constitution. And I don't know how they come up with that judgment, but So I'm skeptical one way or the other. I mean, I think that they might just, when forced to, they might take it down. So I'm not going to get too excited about them or boost them too much only to see them cancel me. But that'll just be another opportunity to do this again. It'll be a lot easier this time because I can literally just drop in what I've the new setup that I've come up with. I did want to mention two lessons, though, two reminders to me. I already knew the lesson, but you should have never treat the online site as a repository of your stuff, the only copy of your stuff. Just think of it as a backup, worst case, but always have a backup somewhere else because that thing can literally disappear overnight and you won't have access to it. And that's what 1&1 did to me is they wouldn't even let me secure shell back into the server so I could get the data off of it. So, you know, part of the delay in me getting online, it was actually a week or a week and a day that I was down, was in assessing my backup and then standing up a new site slowly but surely and getting that functioning elsewhere. And then once I had that figured out, finding a hosting company and then getting things set up there. So it, you know, and I had other things going on in my life too that slowed it down. But yeah, so the lesson is don't rely on them to not pull the plug. And just consider it a disposable version of whatever your stuff is and make regular backups so that you don't lose anything.
Sure, yeah, that's very good advice. And you know what? It is a huge hassle dealing with this, especially, you know, if you're working or, you know, you got other things going on in life. I know I certainly don't have time just to strictly dedicate to my website. So when stuff like this happens, when you run into roadblocks like this or you get deplatformed in one way or the other, it really is, I don't want to necessarily say stressful, but it takes a lot of time to deal with this, and that's part of the problem with it. And they've been successful. I mean, think about, I was actually thinking before we went live earlier today, just off the top of my head, all of the various individuals and websites that have been censored or shut down on one platform or the other over the years. I mean, geez, I was thrown off of PayPal back in like 2014, you know, kind of like the first wave of the PayPal shutdown. Now almost no one can use PayPal that's in, you know, the alt-right or you know, I guess the broader right wing in America or even around the world, I guess you could say. PayPal's pretty much excluded everybody. And it's at a point where I literally cannot do anything with PayPal. They must have my name flagged or something. Because even if I try to register with a different email or something like that, I'm immediately shut down. I can't even send people money using PayPal. I certainly can't receive money using PayPal anymore, but I can't even send other people money. So, I mean, I've basically just refused to even do anything with PayPal. You know, if somebody wants to, if I need to pay somebody and they're asking me to use PayPal, I refuse. I'll say, hey, look, I can give you cash. I can, you know, give you money other ways, but I refuse to use PayPal. And of course, I mean, I can't even use PayPal anyways, even if I wanted to. So, you know, it's been an ongoing problem and you've talked about it in the past. We've talked about it in the past, the shutting, you know, this, again, yeah, this very tyrannical campaign to shut people down. And some of it, some people have experienced it, on a higher level than others. I mean, think about, for example, Andrew Anglin in the Daily Stormer. Say what you will about the man and about his views and some of the things he writes and says. I think he has a right to own a website and to publish his, you know, publish his views, you know, on the website. But he's been, you know, he's experienced a number of challenges trying to keep his website online. Jared Taylor, for another good example, he was thrown off Twitter. He's involved in a major lawsuit against Twitter at the moment, at least from what I understand. I'm not sure exactly where they're at. But everybody of any significance in the right wing has pretty much been impacted by this shutting campaign. So I want to turn it over to you. What are your thoughts on it? What do you got to say about the matter?
Yeah, that's the way things are going. That's the trend. Is Andrew Anglin is the sort of bleeding edge of where this is all going. And eventually, and it will be done to anyone who's any sort of dissident to the Jewish agenda, even if they don't recognize it consciously as a Jewish agenda. It's if you're opposed to Globo Homo Shlomo in any way, your speech is going to be banned.
Yeah, and a good example of that, I hate to cut you off, but I just want to interject real quick. A good example of this is what's going on with Gavin McGinnis and the Proud Boys. You know, these are guys that, are certainly not out there talking about the Jews, right? I mean, but still, you know, we see them getting tied up in court. You know, they've been shut down on Twitter, PayPal, pretty much all these social media outlets. And they've been going through a number of challenges, all because they are not on board with, again, the global homo agenda, as you described it.
Yeah, well, Jared Taylor, likewise. It's not necessary to be as woke or as clear on who it is that's driving that agenda. All you have to do is dissent from it, even slightly. And you're silenced. Yeah. So Gavin McGinnis, who's that guy in the UK? Tommy Robinson. It's another one recently that's in the news. There was a news item recently about PayPal's Jew CEO partnering with the SPLC to ban people. He consults with the SPLC about who to ban and who to not ban. So it's literally organized Jewry is, and the ADL's been doing it for a long time with YouTube and Twitter. And Google and Facebook.
Yeah. Oh, I know. And the thing
literally
is
the Jews doing this, you know, so.
Literally, and they're literally announcing it and, you know, proudly, you know, telling people what they're doing. You know, I follow the ADL on Twitter and I also get their email updates when they put out press releases and whatnot. And they usually send out like a weekly email with all their new stories, their new reports, you know, different articles published by various ADL leaders like Jonathan Greenblatt, for example. This is like a leading theme that they're always talking about, how they're literally partnering with Silicon Valley, and they're openly saying this in their own press releases. They're partnering with Twitter and Facebook and PayPal and YouTube and all these other companies to deal with hate, quote unquote, to deal with anti-Semitism. And of course, these organizations like the ADL, like the Southern Poverty Law Center, they're the ones who are formulating what anti-Semitism means, what hate means. And again, it's basically any criticism of Jews, any honest, frank discussion of Jewish power and influence in America and around the world. This is considered anti-Semitism, and you know, you need to be shut down and censored, according to these people. And, you know, we see how much influence they have in these companies.
Yeah. If a Jew doesn't like it, even just one Jew, then it's quote unquote hate. And if it's something that it's explicitly contrary to what Jews say, contrary to their narrative, or identifies them as the source of the agenda and talks about it in any negative way, that's quote unquote anti-Semitism. Yeah. And so this, I don't have any illusions about my impact on all of this or the role I play in any of it. I'm just a pebble in the ocean. But you can see in world news or news from around the world about what the governments of the world are up to, this increasing theme of banning anti-Semitism. In France, they just recently, Macron said something about wanting to ban or consider anti-Zionism to be equivalent to anti-Semitism. So criticizing Israel is basically criticizing Jews, which it is, and that should be illegal. And in a lot of places, they're still that's the head, the edge of the sword. You know, in a lot of places, they're still pretending that no, we're not trying to ban criticism of Israel. We're just trying to ban hate directed at Jews. So it's not true because it's all related. And a lot of the other things that you and I talk about are even Trump touches on the Jews. And as Trump sees, you know, some of the people who like Trump, even still, when Trump talks, it's mostly Jews getting upset about what he has to say. So,
right. Yeah, exactly. Do you by chance follow, the Unz Review? Ron Unz, he's a Jewish guy.
I followed him for a long time. I don't check in with him on a regular basis anymore. Kind of know what's up there.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. And I wanted to get your take on how we see Jews in the alternative media, like Ron Unz. I know you've been on a guy named Luke Ford's YouTube stream. And if I'm not mistaken, Luke Ford is not ethnically or like racially Jewish, but he did convert to Judaism. Is that correct?
Yeah. I don't know for sure because he acts awful Jewish. But yeah, he makes a big deal out of his conversion and he has the zeal of a convert. So, but he doesn't look all that ethnically Jewish, biologically
sure.
Jewish. So yeah, that was an interesting conversation. But
it definitely was. I watched pretty much the entire stream and it was very interesting. But we see, ethnic Jews, or I guess in Luke Ford's case, people that converted to Judaism, getting out there, getting involved in the alternative media, and almost trying to kind of steer the conversation. In the case with Ron Unz, I've been actually pretty impressed with what he's had to say. He's published some very interesting pieces, and he publishes like a collection of different writers. It's not just him publishing on his website. He has a pretty good group of guys that are writing for him. It seems like to me anyways, I don't follow it all that closely, but I do, kind of check in and see what they're putting up there. Phil Giraldi is his name. He was a former CIA counterterrorism analyst. He put up an article over at Unz.com, The Growing Scam of Anti-Semitism, which I thought was very, very interesting. And he kind of talks about the recent comments made by the Somalian Muslim
Ilhan
congresswoman.
Ilhan Omar,
yeah. Where, again, she's basically making very easily provable statements about the nature of the pro-Israel lobby in the United States and how they basically control our Congress and everybody sucks up to the pro-Israel lobby and basically does anything that Israel wants. This is very, very easy to demonstrate. It should not be a controversial thing to say. And yet everybody's, going hysterical, denouncing her as an anti-Semite, someone who's promoting quote-unquote anti-Semitic tropes. I've been hearing that a lot lately, as if pointing out these basic facts are just – some sort of trope, I guess. It's really incredible the way they've totally weaponized language and rendered a lot of these terms totally meaningless. And, they really are just weapons used to shut down any sort of speech relating to Jews that they don't approve of. That's essentially what's going on at this point. And it's been going on for a very long time, I guess. But it's so out in the open, so obvious now. It's dumbfounding that people aren't picking up on this. I think a lot more people are, don't get me wrong, but it's really kind of just in our face now.
Yeah. There's a lot there to talk about, but on Unz, I think he states some truths, but it's a little bit weakened. It's an inoculative thing. He's trying to get out in front of the white reaction that's coming when whites realize just how much they've been screwed by the Jews. How much harm the Jews have done. It's going to be bad for the Jews. And I think that's basically the instinct that – I don't know if he's doing it on a conscious level or what. But when Unz writes about Jewish influence, that's the impression I get. He's just trying to get out in front because he's very knowledgeable about all the complaints that white nationalists and pro-white people have been making for decades, centuries now. He's aware of them all, and he's aware that the Jews have been meeting that with lies and fraud, and he's uncovering some of it. But he still sides with his own tribe, basically. He's not calling for their expulsion. He's not calling for them to be fought like the way they've been warring on us for centuries and parasitizing us. He's not calling for a sensible reaction to that. He's just basically putting the information out there to expose it so that you can say, okay, well, here's a good Jew that's exposed his own tribe, and now let's just move on to the next stage of Lobo Homo. So I'm not all that happy with when I read stuff basically that I talked about and dozens of other people have talked about over the years and hear it repeated at Unz as if it's fresh out of his own brain.
Right. No, that's a very good point. Yeah.
Giraldi writes good stuff, and I respect people who don't shy away from actually, instead of just dancing around a problem and the symptoms of it, actually talk about the Jewish elephant in the room. That's good. Ilhan Omar, I guess that sort of proves that I like to call the current regime, I call it the anti-white pro-Jew regime. And I've made the point before that it's really anti-white because it's pro-Jew. And Ilhan Omar kind of demonstrates that the anti-white male nature of our current regime is driven by the Jews, because she's not white, she's not Christian, she's not even a man. And yet she's maybe got the kid glove treatment from some of the Jews, but there are other Jews who, you know, want her out of a job because of what she said, which, as you point out, is just stating the facts about the Jewish influence on our politics that everybody knows about, everybody has to know about at the federal level of government, in order just to avoid those kind of making those kind of statements and then having to apologize and go back on what you said. So,
yep.
And you know, and it's a funny Jewish trope. That's what you said about the Jews using language as a weapon is something that their whole history is basically that they use narrative and media and psychopathologizing their enemies to, as a tool to get what they, just as much as money. You know, it's the two go hand in hand, but they are smooth talkers. They have high verbal intelligence. Many of them speak multiple languages, and it's all just tools of their trade, which is infiltrating and manipulating the goyim. And trope is one of those words that you see whenever you read the ADL or SPLC or anybody tangentially related to them. You see this over and over and over again as some sort of psychopathologizing word that, if you look up its literal meaning, it doesn't seem to have the meaning that they impart to it. But they have turned it into this thing like conspiracy theory, which we talked about the last time we talked. They take certain terms, anti-Semitism is another one, and they, through their use in the media, they infuse it with an energy and a meaning that isn't there if you look it up in the dictionary. And trope is a trope. It's a Jew trope. It's a Jew weapon that they pepper their little statements about how something offends them as Jews, and that somebody else needs to please them or protect them or do something for them to protect them from this trope that keeps coming up throughout history, their whole history. You know, they've been mistreated by the goyim amongst whom they've lived and fed off of. And for some weird reason that only the goyim are responsible for is their trope. That's their story that they repeat over and over again, even though it doesn't make any sense.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, if you read, you know, like the ADL, for example, or I was actually just reading an article over at the Algeminer, which is an Israeli-based publication, if I'm not mistaken. It's in, you know, an explicitly Jewish news outlet anyways. And they did an interview with Abe Foxman. And, you know, again, you read how they sort of frame the issue of anti-Semitism. They often describe it as a virus that needs to be, you know, inoculated against or something. And how do you inoculate against anti-Semitism? Well, you got to teach the Holocaust. That's like basically what they argue.
Talk about it in biological terms, it's because it is a biological issue. It's a conflict between peoples, between themselves and their host, who they're trying to basically control the immune response of and overcome it or hijack it and use it to their own ends. So it is a biological issue. And they are just basically using our own governments, our own immune system to the extent they can for their own interests. So, I have a post. The last time we talked, the image I attached to it had to do with the new leader of the ADL. I forget his name, Greenberg or Greenstein or something, saying that the alt-right is a virus looking for or a parasite looking for a host to attach itself to. It's like a complete inversion of the reality, or it's the Jewish reality, and they see us through their own eyes, as of course wanting the same thing. But a lot of what they do is like that. They take some crime that the Jews or some bad thing. This is classic Freudian projection, negative projection, where they take their own guilty feelings and conscience and mind, and they imagine, and to an extent, I think they're conscious of that this is not even right. But they accuse their enemy of having their own bad thinking or malevolent thinking. And unfortunately for us, most of the time it's not true. You know, Trump is a great example of that, where for the whole time of his presidency, we've been hearing in an increasing crescendo of what a white supremacist, white nationalist president he is. And the reality, of course, it's not crazy what they're doing. It makes perfect sense that they are inverting the reality. The reality is that he's the most Jew-friendly, Jew-serving president in history. And that is embarrassing. It would be embarrassing if they actually had to talk about that, if the media actually had to talk about Israeli influence over the United States government and around the world, Jewish influence. So instead, they talk about white supremacism and white nationalism as an evil, rotten thing, and Russian influence. It's a shifting of blame, and it makes perfect sense. It's like a form of jujitsu. There's an energy that needs to be released, and so they release it at the white goyim.
Yes, no doubt. And I want to talk more about Trump. I know you recently published an article over at Age of Treason, President Kushner, which I thought was very interesting. We'll talk about that in just a minute. I want to pick up about this concept of anti-Semitism and quote Abe Foxman from this piece here. I put this out on Twitter. You can find it over on my Twitter feed. The headline here from the Allgemeiner: Tolerance for bigots is what's scary, says ex-ADL chief Foxman of rising global anti-Semitism. And it is absolutely incredible how every single day, literally every single day, I'll open up my inbox and start going through, the daily news briefs by all these Jewish outlets that I follow. And every day there's like five or six articles about the rising threat of anti-Semitism around the world, in France, in the UK, in America, in Germany, in Sweden, in Japan. You know, they just go on and on and on about anti-Semitism. It's really, really incredible. Let me just read briefly part of this piece here. The persistence of anti-Semitism in the wake of the Nazi Holocaust led Jewish organizations to develop containment strategies, Foxman said. Quote, whether Jews are seen as a religion or a race or a nation, we've always been the target, regardless of the regime that's in charge, regardless of the success of Jewish communities, he argued. But this is a virus that still remains latent for millions of people. What we have done in the last 50 years is build a firewall around this latency that more or less worked. The firewall, however, is no longer as secure. Many of the elements of containment are disappearing, Foxman said, citing as an example the role played by historical memory as an antidote to anti-Semitic beliefs. And of course, he's referring to the fake Jewish Holocaust and the broader, entirely weaponized anti-white, pro-Jewish narrative explaining World War II. And he goes on to say that, in addition, whereas previously there was a recognition that there was a price to be paid for hatred and anti-Semitism, and that anti-Semitic individuals or institutions could face a range of sanctions from profound social embarrassment to courtroom litigation, quote, the taboos are now coming down. They may be coming down slightly, but we're still dealing with all sorts of social taboos relating to talking about Jews. You know, you go to Germany or other parts of Europe and you start questioning the Holocaust, you're going to find yourself behind bars as Monica Schaefer and Alfred Schaefer and, you know, the late Ernst Zundel, Ursula Haverbeck. I mean, we could go on. I put up a piece, I think it was last month, or maybe it was in January. A French revisionist, Harvey Rasson, I believe is his name. He's in prison in France for, you know, publishing about the fake Holocaust narrative. Her so, reasons. I mean, I, Yeah, I think that the Jews still have a lot of power when it comes to shutting down, you know, anti-Semitism and Holocaust denial, etc. But I think the thing is with Trump is, and you saw this theme echoed throughout the campaign and even, you know, now when with Trump as president, their biggest fear is that he's opening up space for quote-unquote anti-Semitic ideas and giving legitimacy to them. And maybe he has to a certain extent. I think that the political discourse has been positively impacted by Trump being involved in politics. I think that there's no doubt about that in my mind anyways. But still, there's a lot of very real taboos associated with this information. And maybe in America, it's not technically illegal to be a quote-unquote anti-Semite. But, you know, try to go get a job being a proud anti-Semite. See how well that works out. You know, try to be the most popular kid in school being an open anti-Semite. You're not going to have too many friends. You know, so there are still a lot of containment strategies, as Foxman called them, that are very effective. And again, one of the things that they fear the most is the fading memory of the Holocaust. You know, you see pieces about how all these quote-unquote Holocaust survivors are dying off, and what do they want to do? They want to build holograms to, you know, to instill this fake narrative in children's minds by psychologically and emotionally targeting them and exploiting them with these fake horror stories.
Yeah. About Kushner, I just think I'm tired of Trump and talking about Trump. And back when you and I talked last, it was sort of a, well, we'll have to see what his presidency is like. You know, I wonder how this guy who's worked with Jews and for Jews and whose kids are married to Jews, and I wonder how if he's going to come on down on the side of whites or Jews. Well, we know now it's 2 years in, and he's to, you know, at every opportunity, basically. The media makes a big deal out of it, but as I said, they're just shifting blame from the Israelis and the Jews who really control Trump and have influence over him to blame it on white people. And some white people are kind of stupid and just take that as a signal that he's somehow doing something for white people. So I just think President Kushner, I don't know if it came across in my post very well, but basically when somebody comes up and starts jabbering about this or that thing that's so controversial that Trump said, and isn't this great? What do you think of this? That just the kind of bored response of what's President Kushner up to now would get them maybe thinking a little bit about who really controls this, sort of mocking the people who think that Trump is ever going to do anything good on purpose for white people. And as far as language.
I was going to say real quickly. I mean, I agree with you. I was always cautiously optimistic about Trump, but I mean, he really has been just one big disappointment. And I think a lot of people are really starting to realize that. Really, a lot of things changed for me after his State of the Union. I mean, that was just the most disgraceful, disgusting thing I've ever witnessed. And you know, again, think about it. He's up there talking about the Holocaust. He's up there talking about Jews, and he loves Israel, and he wants more legal immigrants coming into America. Give me a break. He was just at CPAC speaking, and that was one of the big topics that he was talking about, how he wanted more legal immigrants, as if our country is not already overrun with third world people. I mean, we do not need any more immigrants here, period.
Right. Well, you know, I think I had the advantage of living through Reagan and other leaders, Thatcher and so forth, that this is a pattern in Western politics for a long, long time, decades now, of leaders kind of, you know, even Nixon and the Southern Strategy, it's called. I don't want to get into all the details, but it's basically, it was predictable what the way things worked out with Trump or working out with Trump. So it's not a big surprise. And I'm not surprised also that young people, first time around, thinking that this guy, you know, after 8 years of Obama, that we finally got a white president again, that he might do something to please them. But, no. As far as what you mentioned about words and the news and the step up in Jewish issues in the news, I've seen that as well. That you know, you see Holocaust, Nazis, hate, anti-Semitism in the news multiple times a day. Every day is Holocaust Day, which you know, when you hear about Black History Month or whatever, Christmas, some Jew complains about Christmas. It's like every day of the year is Holocaust Day. And there's multiple mainstream, and this is where it's changed over the years that recently, is that what used to be relegated mainly to Jewish publications for Jews is now in the mainstream. Every day it's Holocaust Nazi, Holocaust Nazi, Holocaust, or anti-Semitism too, is another one. And this is just a sign of Jewish power. I mean, to the extent that they're able to pass laws literally illegalizing criticism of Jews, they are demonstrating their power. And with that power comes the responsibility for what they're doing. So if somebody's going to complain and say that they don't like this or that aspect of society or the government, what's happening, little do they know it, but they're criticizing the Jews. That's anti-Semitism. And, you know, at the end of Trump's campaign, there was that thing, that campaign ad that he made that involved, he didn't make it himself, but he put it out there, put his name on it. The Goldman Sachs, Lloyd Blankfein and other creepy people, Soros. And the Jews immediately started screeching about that because they recognized this is the Jews he's talking about. And they continue to cite that. It's sort of like, it's one of those things that it's an offense against the Jews that wasn't even explicitly Jewish, like the torchlit march at Charlottesville. It just looms so large in these Jews' minds. They keep talking about it years after it happened because it's just shocking to them that the goyim have such nerve to do or say such things.
That's it. They get very triggered when they see even not even explicit, like, you know, anti-Jewish animus, just hints at that. You know, like what you're mentioning with Trump's campaign ad, you know, just them even seeing that, they got to shut it down before it gets to the next level. That's their mindset. This is going to lead to another Holocaust is basically how they view it.
Yeah.
It's so funny to me anymore. It's just so childish and ridiculous that we let these people just dictate to us. And you know, we don't even stop to think about what they're telling us. Oh, yeah, Israel's our greatest ally. Yep, let's give them more money, I guess. You know, why not? The Jews said so. You know, yeah, anti-Semitism is bad. It's so, oh my God, it's so frustrating.
Yeah, a lot of the ones, the more unhinged ones, the ones that will go on and on about white nationalism, white supremacism, as if that's what controlled the animating force of our government, will also talk about how Trump is an anti-Semite, a Jew hater, whatever. Most of the sober ones realize that that doesn't fly. You know, that nobody really thinks that Trump doesn't like Jews. So they talk, as you mentioned, about instead – that the criticism of Trump that he is that he emboldens the anti-Semitism. He makes it happen somehow, or he allows people to think that they can get away with saying it.
He facilitates
what's really going on?
It. Yeah.
He facilitates. Yeah. He sets an example or whatever. You saw a lot of that after that synagogue shooting recently, the temple thing, whatever, Robert Bowers. But that's a recurring theme in the Jewish narrative too, is basically, it's always the anti-Semites that are causing the problem. It's never that the Jews are doing something wrong and people are responding to that harm or that wrong that the Jews are doing righteously. That the critics or the enemies of Jews are never righteous in the Jewish media's mind or in any Jew's mind. And that's why in their media, of course, you never see such criticism. And this is maybe where we could talk a little bit about your upcoming debate, maybe with that Jew media guy, that they never regard you as having a valid point. If you're a critic of Jews, you're an anti-Semite, that's it. There's no need to really entertain any further investigation into who you are or what you are. You're anti-Jew. That's it. Shut it down.
Yes, exactly. Well, and the way they frame it, you know, again, it's a virus. It's a disease of the mind, you know, where it's just irrational. You know, no one ever stops to think, you know, oh, well, what do the anti-Semites actually really have to say? In that Jewish columnist, we'll talk about that in just a minute. That's basically what he was arguing. He's saying, look, we need to be confronting quote unquote anti-Semites and bringing truth to them and shutting, not necessarily shutting. Well, he does actually argue that they should be shut down too, but, you know, he's saying that they need to be confronting them intellectually and dealing with these issues. We'll talk about it in just a minute. I wanted to also cite one final article from the Allgemeiner, again, dealing with anti-Semitism and how central of a theme it is to our federal government. And in this case, it's the U.S. Congress. Headline here, Anti-Semitism remains a very serious problem. newly relaunched bipartisan U.S. House Task Force says. They have a task force in the United States Congress dealing with anti-Semitism. Trump recently appointed the anti-Semitism envoy. I don't know if you caught that story. I wrote about it over on the Realist Report, I think just last week. Yeah. So there's a federal, there's a position in the federal government basically working to protect Jews worldwide. That's literally a quote from the guy that was just named the anti-Semitism envoy, who, shocking no one, is the son of Holocaust survivors and a big-time Jewish lawyer out here in California. You know, very, very strongly identified as Jewish, you know, very concerned about the interests of the Jewish people. And yet, you know, he would deny that same right to whites, of course, like all Jews. This piece here from the Allgemeiner, here's a quote here from this task force. They say here, let's see, Congress has an important responsibility to raise awareness of this anti-Jewish bigotry and to condemn and combat it in all its forms, the lawmakers continued. We look forward to working with our congressional colleagues to do all we can to fight anti-Semitism. So you see how important this is to, you know, our congressional representatives at the federal level. It really just shows you that the Jews do control everything. I mean, give me a break. These guys are up there talking about anti-Semitism. Meanwhile, our country's being invaded by, you know, illegal and legal immigrants from all over the world. Nobody wants to talk about that. We want to talk about anti-Semitism and protecting Jews. It's incredibly frustrating, but just revealing. I mean, it just shows you again how much power and influence that they have.
Yeah, that's all. It's all true.
You haven't really been as active on your website or blogging or doing podcasts and stuff. And I haven't either. I mean, this radio program that I'm doing now is kind of a new thing. I've been broadcasting live on Sundays at 3 p.m. Pacific for about a month now. And part of my problem was I just felt like I've been making the same points over and over and over again in just different ways. It's like, yes. God, how many times do we need to go over this? How many more examples do we need to prove what we're saying? I mean, it's
yeah, that's kind of my reaction, John. When you list out this stuff, I mean, like, and most of the time I don't post. It's not because I don't have something to say. It's because I've already said it dozens of times before, and it just gets kind of tedious. And I don't know. As far as the point you made about the U.S. passing laws, yeah, this is something relatively new. It's certainly the intensity with which, you know, this new proposed legislation. It's hard to keep track of what's been just proposed and shot down or died in committee or something and what actually gets passed. But yeah, they're hot to and are actually considering, and it's a bipartisan thing, which kind of shows you they control both of these parties that are supposedly at each other's throats. You're supposed to pick one or the other to be part of. But when it comes to the Jews, there's like no difference between them. They've actually compete only on who's more servile of the Jews. And that's true. The main point I wanted to make is not just in the U.S., but in France and Britain and Sweden and Germany and, you know, every white country or formerly white country quickly becoming non-white is that actually, you know, just based on the fruits of what you see coming down the pipe in laws is run actually ruled by Jews, if not physically by Jews being out in front as the figureheads, then certainly behind the scenes as the people who's the government is acting as if it's catering to. It's the again, with the white privilege stuff that they keep screeching louder and louder, it's actually Jewish privilege. And this is a demonstration. You don't need to go to Age of Treason to read what I have to say about it. Just go to the Jewish media headlines and you know read between the lines about who is driving this agenda to outlaw criticism of Jews.
Yes, exactly. And you know, that's the thing about Jewish power is they don't even necessarily need to be, you know, in positions of power, you know, like running the show. They are doing that in America. I mean, that's what's so funny is like you do actually see Jews everywhere. You know, look at the Trump administration, look at the Obama administration before him. look at the mass media, look at the punditry class, look at Congress, look at the Supreme Court. I mean, it is just like totally dominated by Jews. And, you know, we could sit here and list off their names and, you know, go through it one by one and break this all down. I don't want to do that right now, but, you know, you literally could do that. We have Jews basically openly running our government, running our elite institutions all throughout society. I think generally speaking, that is a true objective statement that you can make about the United States of America. And I think that that would apply to other Western countries as well. Maybe not to the extent it does here. But even more important, see, the Jews don't even need to be in these positions of power. If they can control the discourse and control the narratives on which, you know, we sort of operate in society, then they've already won. And that has been how they've been so successful. Our society is dictated by Jewish narratives, by entirely weaponized and in most cases totally false or highly exaggerated, to say the least, narratives of history, of race, of immigration. Think about like this debate over immigration and America's this nation of immigrants. This is a Jewish communist narrative that, you know, most Americans 50, 60 years ago would have scoffed at and laughed at. America was not a nation of immigrants. America was a nation of white Christian settlers and explorers who built this great nation. You know, they've totally changed everything and totally weaponized the entire narrative.
Well, they
not only about immigration, but any number of other issues. You know what I mean? So my point, I guess, is that they, if they can control the narrative, which again, they've been so successful at doing due to their influence in media and education and in the government, they don't need to be in these key positions of power, although they're also doing that as well.
Yeah, the two weapons are media and money, and they reinforce each other. If you have a lot of money, you can buy media. And if you have media saying nice things about you, you can make a lot of money or keep your money. You know, if your media says bad things about you, you'll quickly find yourself losing money, like Elon Musk as an example. But yep, when absolutely. I say media and money, I mean in very broad terms. You know, media, I also include things like moralizing narratives that go back all the way in Jewish history. I mean, they've been basically portraying themselves as righteous, moral people and telling other people what to think is good and bad and right and wrong for their whole history. And money, it's not just about, you know, the Federal Reserve. It's the Bank of England. It's the bankers in Renaissance Italy. It's Joseph, the advisor to the Pharaoh. It goes all the way back, and it's also corporations and business interests as well. So it's not all Jewish, of course, but those are the domains. Those are the military people call that a theater of combat, you know. And in those two theaters, Jews dominate, and it rolls out into everything else. And so the culture is a big part of that. It's a consequence. You know, the things we see in culture that we don't like, the homosexuality being promoted, and just too many things to name. Basically, if you don't like it, it's probably being promoted by the Jews using their media and money.
Yes, absolutely. And they make no bones about it. You can find articles from the Jewish Daily Forward, for example, or any number of other explicitly Jewish news outlets bragging about this, bragging about how Jews have promoted and mainstreamed homosexuality, transgenderism. They openly talk about how they're for open borders and massive, unlimited third world immigration into America and in other Western countries. And I mean, I could go on and on. Pornography, sexual degeneracy, that, you know, the promotion of it anyways. So many other topics. And you know, again, you point these things out, you quote them, you like cite a Jewish news outlet or a Jewish journalist or writer, and then somehow you're the bad guy, you're the anti-Semite.
It's not the fact alone that is anti-Semitism. It's saying the fact with a negative connotation to it, if you're critical of it. If you want to say that Jews are great, thanks Jews for opening our borders and exposing us to all this murder and rape and so forth, no-go zones, then that creates confusion. Why? Because you're saying thanks Jews, so you're saying it as if it's positive, but you're also then citing all this negative stuff. And they're kind of experts at doing that. So they catch on to that right away. You're not going to fool them by pretending to be their best friend. Their old saying is, you know, a philo-Semite is just an anti-Semite who doesn't know it yet.
Right.
Well, anti-Semites who don't, whether we know it or not.
Right, exactly. Well, and one thing that comes to mind is Joe Biden's comments, where he was basically saying that you know, the Jews were played a huge role in normalizing homosexuality, and I think he made some other comments along those same lines. And you know, again, he's not saying that in a critical way. He's like celebrating it, like, "Oh wow, thanks Jews, you guys really did a good job in helping us."
Yes, but it makes you know them accept. Nervous.
Yeah, exactly. And the Jews were like kind of skeptical, blame. Like, "How do we deal right. with this?" Because he's if it's what credit, he's saying is right, but we don't want people to know this.
Yes, not until it can be given as credit. They want it as credit, something good and praiseworthy. Once their enemy is dead and gone, then they can talk about how they outmaneuvered their enemy and you know, off them, or trick them into offing themselves, or trick one enemy into offing the other enemy for them, is the classic, typical Jewish way of doing things. But while right. it's going on, it's anti-Semitism to even acknowledge that's what's going on. If Jews are doing their let's you and him fight thing, then the number one thing you can do to make them screech out loud about how offended they are, how you're aggressing against them, is just point out how they are driving it, how they're driving the warmongering wherever it's going on. They're constantly stirring that kind of shit.
Yes, no doubt. Well, Tan, we've only got about, I think, 4 minutes right now, and I definitely did want to mention this article that I just published. It was late last night. It was actually early this morning, I guess. It was at like midnight. I think I finally published this piece. And you can find it over at therealistreport.com. An open challenge to Jewish columnist. Let's have a debate. And it was so interesting coming across this piece. It was published by a Canadian Jewish columnist named Josh Lieblin, I think is how you pronounce it. And I came across this just the other day, and it tied in so perfectly to what we were going to talk about in this podcast. I wanted to get this written and you know, get it out there so we could talk about it. And, you know, this whole program, we've basically been talking about how Jews have used censorship and you know, shutting people down, putting pressure on third parties like Twitter or Facebook or PayPal to shut down any sort of criticism of them. Or not even necessarily criticism, but any sort of truthful, factual statements made about them. And this guy wrote a piece where he basically argues that the Jews need to be out there openly confronting anti-Semites and dealing with them. You know, simply shutting them down wasn't enough. Using violence to shut them down isn't enough. We need to be out there talking to them and dealing with them face to face. That's pretty much what he argued in this piece. Let me read briefly from my post here. Let's see here.
John, let me make
one
point.
Yeah, go ahead.
It's just, this is an example of two Jews, three opinions about what's best for the Jews. I think it's just Jews have an endless number of schemes and plans of how to deal with whatever they think is a problem for Jews and how to solve it. So that's what
I agree. I totally agree. And I think that 9 out of 10 Jews would totally disagree with this guy and say, no, we cannot.
Shutting it down is working
anti-Semitic.
Well enough, they would say. We don't need to do anything else.
Well, think about like Deborah Lipstadt, like this quote unquote Holocaust expert, like the scholar or whatever. That's what she's known for anyways. You know, she is openly up there saying she refuses to engage in any sort of discussion or debate with Holocaust skeptics. You know, that she wants nothing to do with them. They need to be excluded from society. So that, I think her opinion is sort of the mainstream Jewish opinion on these issues. But this guy makes an argument that, no, we need to actually be confronting these people. So I read this with great interest. And I wrote this piece basically challenging him to have a debate. He says here, this is a quote from his piece. We are a people who put a premium on learning, who are guided by the written and spoken word. He argues this is published in the Canadian Jewish News. And of course, he's talking about his fellow tribesmen, his fellow Jews. And he says that can make it hard to comprehend why today's discourse, especially online, is filled with ignorance, both willful and unintentional, wannabe demagogues trigger outrage on social media, and it's become a popular pastime to sneer at them and the triggered alike. And he goes on to say, brushing off those who espouse anti-Semitism online as stupid or deluded isn't getting the job done. The trouble is that few, if any, are willing to step onto their turf and call out their falsehoods to their face. And of course, he's talking about quote-unquote anti-Semites. And he says here, what we need and what the Jewish community must seek to develop is a group of trained, skilled debaters and social media influencers who are wise to the haters' verbal tricks and traps, in addition to the Nazi punchers, the deplatformers, and the behind-the-scenes operators. Yeah. So he's arguing that we need to employ all of these tactics. We need to be deplatforming people. We need to be out there, you know, engaging in violence against Nazis and anti-Semites, and we also need to operate behind the scenes to get them shut down. But we should also be, you know, developing this, you know, this group of people that can go out there and confront them verbally. So it was a very interesting article, and I hope he actually responds to this challenge. We'll see.
Yeah, good luck to you if you do debate with him, and make sure you get a recording on your own side, because I can see him if he takes you to some his site or some other place that you, if it doesn't turn out well in his eyes, that you just won't ever hear about it. It'll never be published. It's as if the guy never heard about what was happening on social media over the last 2 or 3 years, where this debate was going on, that finally the Goyim realized, hey, I can talk back to this Jew who wrote an article in the Atlantic or whatever, the Jew Republic or one of those shitty magazines, and I can make fun of them. I can either make a logical argument, and many people did that, or I can just post a funny Shlomo image or in some other way point out their Jewishness. And that was going pretty well on Twitter. In fact, it was going so well that the Jews were having nervous breakdowns about being challenged openly and frequently anytime they wrote something. And the answer to that was the Jews shut it down. You can still find a little bit of it, but you've got to basically go through a bunch of burner accounts, you know, one a day, or depending upon how frequently you interact with them, to keep that up, or just make snapshots so they don't even see what you're saying about them. And post images and respond to that for your buddies' laughs and approval. But what used to be great about Twitter when I was using it, what was I found so addictive, was that you could go right to those people and you could say what you wanted to say, basically to their face electronically, reach out to them in a way that everybody else could see as well. And that's, the Jews hated that. That's what they cite as the part of this rising anti-Semitism online. Was that exactly that being recognized as Jews? And when you look at their claims of worldwide anti-Semitism is on the rise, they cite statistics about crimes, most of which are hoaxed anyway. But one of the real things that they're talking about is basically the exposure of Jewish power, Jewish influence, Jewish wrongdoing, and that's what they're really upset about. You know, they call it anti-Semitism because they anticipate that it's not going to be good for the Jews when people figure out, you know, and do more than just talk about it online.
Right. Well, exactly. They're afraid of the Goyim knowing.
Yes.
And the Goyim are starting to know a lot more than they used to, certainly. And I think the internet has played a huge role. Websites like yours have played a huge role. And, you know, I think it's very important. We are actually offline now. The show is still being recorded, and we'll wrap up here in just a minute. But if anybody was listening live, obviously you're not going to be listening live now, but this is still being recorded.
Did it cut off in the middle of my rant? I'm sorry about that, John.
No, you're fine. We had exactly an hour, but it's still being recorded. It's no problem. Most people are downloading the podcast anyway, so one thing I did want to say,
not putting up a post. You told me when we got on here that it was going to be live. I didn't expect that. That's why I didn't make a post about it, but I'll go post something now. At least when's the download going to be available, do you think?
You know, as soon as we're wrapped up here, I'll pretty much get it edited and put it up on my site, and I'll send you a link. Cool. But real quick, he says, one final thing he says is that he basically argues that quote-unquote anti-Semites from the right or the left, whether they're populist or establishment, they and their falsehoods must be faced directly and destroyed with relentless truth. And that's kind of how he concludes his piece. And so, Josh, let's have a chat, buddy. I'd love to do it. I think that I could host a conversation between us and do so objectively, fairly, honestly. I'm not out to, you know, target you or you know, misrepresent anything you're saying. I think it would be a good conversation to have. I'm kind of doubtful that it actually will work out. I did tweet this article out, and I tweeted it directly at him. Anybody out there listening, if you're on Twitter, please do go over there and like retweet it. You know, tweet at this guy, say, you know, hey, what do you think about this? You know, you should go on and talk with John. It'd be an interesting conversation. Let's see if we can get this going and get something worked out, because I think it would be a good conversation to have. I'm kind of skeptical that anything will actually work out. I was actually surprised. He did actually send me a message. And he said here, I'm actually going to pull it up right here on Twitter. He said, he did like a hand wave emoji, like hi. And then he said, so you're not one of those guys who thinks I'm a secret lizard, are you? And I said, nope, not me. I said, your article was very interesting. Did you get a chance to read my piece? Are you interested in having a conversation about all this? And then he said, yeah. And he just responded a few minutes ago, actually, while we were on air. He said, yeah, it took me a little while to get through all the links, but I sure did read it. And then he said, you really want me to come on your radio program? So as soon as we're done here, I'm going to reply back and say, absolutely. I'd love for you to come on my radio program and have a conversation with me. So maybe this will actually work out. I guess we'll see, Tan.
Yeah, I'm curious to hear what happens, what the conversation is like. I mean, as I said, when I debated Luke Ford, I found the antagonistic environment actually stimulating and good for, I think I made good arguments, and he pulled it out of me because he was antagonistic. And it was mild.
Absolutely.
Antagonism. It wasn't, you know, most of the time, Jews have this kind of visceral reaction where they can't even stomach to say your name or to speak to you directly as if you're a human being. So it'll be interesting for him to have to get over that, instinctive reaction that Jews have. But, again,
yes,
I think get a recording of it on your side, because otherwise it'll probably never see the light of day.
No, I absolutely will do that. And I'm going to respond to him, and we'll see if we can make this happen. I think it would be a good conversation. You know, one final note I wanted to mention, and I meant to bring this up earlier when we were talking about Ron Unz and some of these other alternative media Jews who are out there kind of getting involved in some of these issues. I'm just looking for one quote-unquote honest Jew out there who actually supports the basic concepts of white nationalism. Like, I'm looking for one person to actually affirm the right for white people to be proud of their identity, to have to have their own nations, their own homelands. And thus far, even guys like Unz or Gilad Atzmon, I've had a conversation with him in the past. These guys deny that. I mean, they say that no, they basically buy into this anti-white Jewish nonsense. They might be, you know, speaking the truth on some other issues, but when it comes down to this issue, you know, the white nationalist arguments, they just can't deal with it. And they reject these ideas, and that should be the litmus test. You know, do you support the concept of white people having their own countries, having their own nations, being proud of their identity? And every Jew I've ever encountered has rejected that line of thinking. And I think that's very, very problematic. Go ahead, Dan. I'll give you the last word, buddy.
I had an experience with Lawrence Oster early on in my education having to do with Jews, and he taught me a lot. And I think other people – Oster's dead now. Other people will learn from other Jews. They may learn from Unz, or they may learn from Gilad Atzmon. But they'll find out, I think, in the end, I'm confident, the same thing I did, which is they're just gatekeepers. They're people who are just Jewing in a different way. They're Jews Jewing in a different way is all. They're minority figures. They don't have any influence really over the mass of Jews, the way that things are actually going. They just pine for, in Oster's case, you know, he thought of how wonderful it was that the 60s or even the 50s, and that he wanted to get back to that somehow, when the Jews weren't in the headlines so often, and there were no Muslims in the countries, and Jews were hunting Nazis all around the world. That was his ideal, and he just wanted to preserve that. And with these other Jews, it's other reasons, but similar things. You know, Gilad Otzman's maybe comfortable playing jazz in London and doesn't like the way things are going, the direction things are going, wants to basically preserve white society to the extent it serves as a host for Jews. And, you know, there's many, many other Jews that are like that. They're still a minority. Stephen Miller is another one that comes to mind that, although he's never spoken explicitly about his rationale, what's going on in his mind, what makes him tick. Many of these other Jews have, and if you pay close attention to what they say, you can hear them basically saying, you know, this whole alt-Jew movement is a good example, the intellectual dark web. He said, oh, no, we hate the Nazis. We're just as much against the Nazis. They don't like some things about the way the quote-unquote left is doing things. They think that's heading for disaster. But what's the disaster? Well, that the Nazis might be empowered by in reaction to this. And so they're not really opposed to the mainstream Jewing. They're just – they have an, you know, a different Jewish take on the way things should be going in order to – but the enemy is the same enemy. It's us. It's white Nazis, and every white person is basically a Nazi.
Absolutely. That's exactly how they think. Generally speaking, anyways, that's 100% spot on.
Yeah.
Well, Tan, thanks a lot, man. This was a great conversation, as it always is. And yeah, man, we'll have to do this again. I'll keep you posted. I'll let you know what Josh says here in just a few minutes.
All right. Thanks, John. Good talking.
Okay. Yes, sir. Thank you very much. And thanks, everybody, for listening. I will talk to you all very soon.